Welcome to the Fanboy Strike Back Weekly Review Podcast, episode 46.
Hey, and welcome to the Fanboy Strike Back Weekly Review Podcast. I'm David.
I'm Eric.
And we are the Fanboys of Strike Back. Every week, we read the comics that come out. We read a couple that we choose to like, and then we come to our website, fanboystrikeback.com. One of us will pick what we thought was the best book of the week, write a little review, and then we'll come to the podcast here and we'll talk about those choice books. And we're going to talk about everything in these books. There are going to be spoilers. If you don't want to be spoiled, you want to pause the podcast and come back later. And we are big fans of Star Wars also. So later on the show, we're going to give you a review of the new Star Wars movie, The Clone Wars. See how that matches up with the classic Star Wars films. It's a little bit different. But comics first. Eric, you had the pick this week. So what'd you pick?
I picked Action Comics number 868. And this is the part three of the Brainiac storyline by Geoff Johns and Gary Frank. Maybe by reading my review, you could tell like how excited I was about this book.
A little bit.
But holy crap, this, you know, you told me you've been reading Action Comics before I have, and you're like, you need to read Geoff Johns' Action Comics. And I was like, oh, you know, all right. And I started with the Brainiac story, and holy crap, this, like, just to have a good Superman book again.
It's been a while.
There's actual stakes in this, is what it feels like. And I don't know, there's so much about this that I loved. And even from the beginning, and I've heard some criticism about Gary Frank's art where people were like, oh, you know, in the beginning he's all talking about, he's doing a TNA type of thing with Kat, the gossip reporter at the Daily Planet.
Right.
And I'm going to take issue with that because what Gary Frank does is he has that character in there as the butt of the joke. They're making fun of her because she's so fake. And
right. And
you know, when Supergirl shows up in the next couple pages, I was so relieved to see like Supergirl wasn't portrayed as being some tarted up like jailbait. Like, you know, she's kind of flat chested and looks young and stuff like that. And There's even a joke that Kara's like, there seems to be some kind of weird plastic in you or something like that. And you know, it was really well done and it was almost like a slap in the face to all the TNA, the other TNA books out there. I liked it.
Yeah, exactly. Just like a little commentary on what's going on.
Yeah, and so just to go on with that, like, I loved Superman had been abducted by Brainiac, and there was this moment where he wakes up, and it was very much like Neo waking up in the real world in the Matrix. Like, he's plugged into all these things, and it was kind of messed up. Like, he's got these needle things that have bored into his head, and he's got this really long tube. Like, he pulls the tube out of his throat, and I was like, oh, man, it was just like the Matrix, actually. But then I was like, man, they messed up Superman. Like, and he's pissed. So, like, Superman...
Yeah, it was pretty disgusting.
It was, but you see, like, Brainiac has collected not only... You know, he doesn't only collect knowledge, but he collects, like, the last specimens of a bunch of different races, and he has those stored in these containers. Then he also collects the cities, and one of them is Kandor. And just, like, seeing, like, instances where Superman finds Kandor and stuff like that, and the look in his eyes was really fantastic, but also just the revelation of, like, this is the first time we see the real Brainiac. And he wasn't some robot, and he wasn't some, like, weak, green scientist guy. Like, there's a scene in this when his hand comes out, and apparently Brainiac hasn't been, like, awoken from his hibernation for, like, 30 years. And he comes out because Superman, he's been looking for Kal-El, and...
Oh, no, it's longer. It's like 300 years or 3,000 years or something.
Maybe it was longer than that, actually. But, yeah, his hand comes out, and you see the shadow as Superman's like, hello, Brainiac, and he looks up, and Brainiac's, like, big, and he's intimidated. Just the fact that they made Brainiac, like, a viable threat, and that's kind of the thing we always talk about with Superman, is he needs someone to fight, and... Mm-hmm. I always thought, like, Brainiac fits that very, very well. And just the way Gary Frank drew him, like, very cold, very emotionless in his eyes, you know, and I think a lot of it also had to play with the animated series. Like, I always kind of hear that monotone robotic voice coming out of Brainiac. But just to couple that with the art, like, it was playing in my head, and Brainiac was actually, like, pretty scary. And they brought up the fact also that, like, Brainiac will, after he's acquired all the knowledge of a civilization and taken what he wants from it, he'll also destroy it. And so it's hinted, Superman says, you know, what did you do to Krypton's son? And I was just like, oh, maybe Brainiac had a part in this.
Yeah, it looks like it.
So, there's just a lot of nice little scenes. The scene between Ma and Pa Kent about how, you know, she's worried about Clark and stuff like that, which is all pretty standard stuff, but it was all just really well done. And then the fact at the end where Brainiac's ship is coming over Metropolis, and everyone, and even Kara's, like, freaking out, and people are just really, really intimidated by it, and then you see that the sports writer at the Daily Planet, where the hell is Superman? And I had the same feeling. I was like, well, I knew where Superman was, but, like, you know, we need Superman. So, I don't know, I just really got involved in the story, and I'm just really having a lot of fun with it. And I can't remember since maybe the 90s when I had this much fun in a Superman monthly book. And so I was just very happy to do that. And so I want to take this and kind of acknowledge the fact that, like, it's we are kind of in a Superman renaissance right now. It's a very, very wonderful thing to really, Action Comics is it was where Superman first appeared. If it wasn't for Action Comics, a lot of us wouldn't be here. So
yeah, that's very true.
I wanted to acknowledge that, and just happy that, you know, if it's happening anywhere, it's happening in this book, and it's a great story. So way to go, Jeff Johns. You know, Jeff Johns is just doing his magic. I didn't mention him, but he's doing what he does, and it's wonderful.
Yeah, and this was the beginning of his. I mean, he said that, you know, if you liked what he was doing on Green Lantern, just wait until he really gets into Superman, and it looks like, you know, he's gonna do it.
Yeah, and so it's just wonderful. So I'm really enjoying this title. I'm going to stay on with it after the Brainiac arc and see where this goes. But Jeff Johns, coupled with Gary Frank art, the very realistic looking art, it's been a great book. So
yeah, I agree. Very good pick. Fantastic Four number 559. Did you happen to pick this up at all?
I didn't. I heard it was good.
Oh, this was real good. Like, really good. The last issue ended with there was this new team of defenders that showed up, and they were trying to kidnap Doom, and they were successful. And you found out that Bruce Banner is the person, you know, the Hulk, is in charge of these new defenders. And this is Millar and Hitch's run on Fantastic Four, so this is all out of continuity, nothing to do with Secret Invasion. So, this issue basically had to do with these new defenders kind of lashing out at the Fantastic Four, Johnny Storm in particular. And I'm not going to talk about the whole issue. They basically just take down Johnny, and it's pretty cool because Johnny actually really holds his own. You don't really see the Human Torch ever really fight on his own. You know, it's always like Johnny with the team, but. Mm-hmm. This book really showed that, like, Johnny Storm, he's like, you know, he's a veteran. He's been around for a long time, and he can really, really hold his own. And he takes these members out with no problem, but all of a sudden, this Hooded Man showed up, and that's what they call him. They call him the Hooded Man. He's wearing a hood. You don't see his face. And he just takes Johnny out just like that. So the mystery of who the Hooded Man is, that's going to, you know, hopefully be developed soon. But at the very end, they have Johnny captured, you know, he's shackled together with Doom, and they're trying to find out what's going on, and Banner's there, and Johnny's freaking out. And you cut back, and, you know, Banner's like, you know, there's more going on than what you think. And it's just like only Brian Hitch can do. You cut back all the way, and you see that Johnny and Doom are chained to the body of Galactus. And that just, I was like, oh, it was so good. I did not see that coming at all. I don't know where this is going, but this was just damn good. Just so, so good. So right. I would recommend, like, picking up the next issue, because this was just, I can't say, I was just so excited.
All right, well, maybe I'll go back and pick that up. I'll try Fantastic Four every once in a while, just looking, like I did with X-Men at first, just looking for a story that catches me, so.
Mm-hmm. might be a good one for you.
Okay. Speaking of X-Men, I picked up X-Men Origins Jean Grey number one. It was one shot with Sean McKeever as the writer. And trying to look for the artist real quick. The artist was Mike Mayhew. And I know I've heard a lot of people talk about this, how it's very redundant and stuff like that if you're an X-Men fan. Well, I know Jean Grey. She's a very iconic comic book character, but I'm not, like, immersed in the X-Men world. So I picked this up thinking, well, it looks really good, so, and I like Sean McKeever, so picked it up. I really enjoyed this book a lot.
Yeah.
Mayhew's art, very Alex Ross style. It's a painted look. It's very realistic. But basically, it follows from the point where Jean Grey first starts manifesting her powers to the point where Xavier comes and works with her to kind of bring her out of her shell and brings her to the school and becoming an X-Man and her first few years, because she does age several years through the story. She's definitely younger in the beginning than she is at the end. But I just really enjoyed this. Like, I enjoyed getting to know her better. And like I said, this is probably all very redundant if you're an X-Men fan or a reader and stuff like that. But for someone who's just kind of coming into it, like I said, I know who she is from the cartoon and everything like that. And I know she's not around anymore, but just being an original member of the team, I really enjoyed just kind of seeing her struggling with being different as a teenager. And that's a lot of what X-Men is, just kind of being different, and, you know, especially as a teenager, everyone feels that way. But it was interesting to see what trials and tribulations she went through as a teenager that helped her powers come out. And it was also very interesting to see Xavier seeking her out and putting the team together. I really enjoyed that as the first X-Men come together. Mayhew's art was beautiful on this, too.
I think technically Jean was the first X-Men. They always say that Scott was, but I'm pretty sure Jean was the first one.
Was she? Yeah, there's a scene with them training in the Danger Room, and just with the old costumes and everything, and she's Marvel Girl, and it was just really cool to see all that. Very, very cool. Yeah, when she has the hood and everything like that, but,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was just a really fun book. It's $4, but also it's just one shot. If you're interested, you know, you can pick it up and one and done type of thing. They're going to do one shots, it looks like, with all the original X-Men. I think the next one is Beast. But I really enjoyed it. I had a good time reading it.
Nice, nice. Yeah, I was going to pick it up, but my store didn't have it, so I'm glad you picked it up, though, Eric. Embracing your inner X-Men. I like it.
It's good. I can't deny it.
Secret Invasion, number 5. This is the first issue that actually disappointed me.
I can't believe that.
It's so weird because everyone is having the opposite like reaction. Everyone's like, oh, finally something happened. It's great. And I was just like, here's the thing. I loved this issue. The only thing I didn't like was the fact that everyone on the ship was really a Skrull. I was hoping at least one person would be, in fact, even if it was Mockingbird, would really, in fact, be a hero. Because if you look at it and it's just like, yes, the whole point of them being in disguise was to distract the heroes, and that's what they're doing perfectly. But I was hoping as, you know, readers, we were going to get a little bit more out of it than that. Like, I thought we were going to have, like, one gem in there. And I was just a little disappointed. But other than that, and honestly, and I'll say, like, I let that kind of ruin the issue for me, and that was kind of my own deal. But other than that, I liked it. And I have to say that Maria Hill, I think, was the best part of this issue.
That was really good, that scene. You know, she's like, I'm going to make a t-shirt. It's like, where's this going? But it turned out really, really well. Yeah, they'll say, Nick Fury was great. I like that a lot. I also really like badass, like, angry Reed Richards. I have never seen him like that. And just, like, the fact, like, he took it to town on this one, and there was so much of the heroes, like, you really can tell in this one that the stakes are high, and they're just fed up, because both Reed Richards and Clint Barton, like, they hit a point, and they hit a wall, and they're just, like, coming out pissed in this one.
You know, the funny thing I thought about this issue was that, you know, you don't see a lot of new characters in comics, and you don't see a lot of, well, even popular or prominent new characters, but Asian Brand and Maria Hill were two very prominent characters in this issue. And that's just really refreshing to see. I mean, Asian Brand especially, she's only a couple years old. She got her start in Astonishing X-Men, and she was, like, pivotal to this, whatever, you know, what happened in this issue. Like, she's the one who saved Reed Richards.
Yeah, I like incorporated her so much.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool. And like you said, it's like the stakes are really big. You know, Reed was in prison, Brand gets him out, and it's like he wastes no time. You know, he's like, I know what's been going on, and they've been trying to use me, you know, my brain to do this, you know, and they kept me alive because they still needed me. We need to go. We need to go now. We need to do this. And it was just like he was on top of it. And I love the badass Reed Richards. It's great.
Yeah. Another thing I was looking at, because they did the Mockingbird reveal, it seems like a lot of these Skrulls were the Skrulls who didn't even realize they were Skrulls. And I don't know.
Still thought they were human.
Yeah, and I don't know if, you know, if that's how it meant to come across or not. But it's like, you know, even if you were putting sleeper agents into that position, it seems weird that you would put them in so deep that they wouldn't even realize. Much like Captain Marvel, like, he just defected because that's who he thought he was and stuff like that.
Right.
But I thought that was a very interesting take on it. But yeah, just that scene where Mockingbird gets revealed and she's like, just, you know, what's going on? Like, she doesn't understand. I almost felt bad for her.
Mm-hmm.
And Clint just, he takes her down. And he's at the end of it, he's just like, we're going to kill every last one of them. I was, by the end of it, I was like, oh. And yes, I realize that they're still on the island and everything like that, but the ship's there, the rescue party's there. It's implied that they're
about to leave.
Yeah, like, I'm sure by the time next time we see them, they're going to be in New York, so. But, wow. I mean, I was very happy with this issue.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. The more, like, when I reread it, and the more I think about it, it was pretty sweet. It's funny, too, because when Clint, in one of the earlier issues, you know, Clint made a comment about, like, you know, how I haven't had, you know, I haven't been through enough this year, now this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, like, bad stuff just keeps on happening to the guy.
Yeah, he cannot
I mean,
catch a break.
He dies, he comes back, he finds out one of his best friends is dead, his Avengers are gone. The Civil War is going on, he has to take a new code name, new costume, and now this. And this is just, like, he is pissed. And I'll give it to Linnell Yu, because, I mean, the whole book is gorgeous. But the last page, looking at him, like, you can just tell, like, I felt emotion just, you know, looking at that page. Like, he is just pissed off, and that's not going to be good for anyone, especially not Skrulls.
Yeah. Yeah, really. Like, I'm excited now for the next issue. So, okay, a new feature that David and I are going to be doing now is kind of a book-counter-book thing where we challenge each other to pick up a book that normally we wouldn't read. And so, with that, I challenged David to pick up Booster Gold, and he challenged me to pick up Secret Invasion Inhumans. And so, let's talk about the Inhumans first. This was the first issue of four.
Secret Invasion tie-in.
Yeah, and to be fair, I'm not really up to speed with the Inhumans. I like Black Bolt, from what I've read in the Illuminati, and my interest from that led me into this book. And so this was kind of the Inhumans, especially the Queen, dealing with the fact that Black Bolt is gone, and they have to realize that they can't trust anyone. And, you know, is it an act of war? Should they involve themselves with Tony Stark? I thought that was all very interesting, and I didn't realize, like, all the kind of, like, I don't know, bureaucracy and stuff with, like, the other king of the Inhumans, or
Maximus is Black Bolt's brother.
Yeah, I didn't realize all that kind of stuff, and I was like, wow, that's...
He weaseled his way in.
He's kind of a dick.
Oh, yeah, Maximus the Mad, he's basically the Inhumans' villain, and now he's their king.
Yeah. But I did enjoy seeing that, and I thought there was a lot of nice moments with Black Bolt's wife, especially the scene in her chambers where she's looking out and she's talking about how, like, we silence was our song and stuff like that. And I don't know, it came across as very genuine to me. I really enjoyed it. I also liked seeing that Black Bolt was still alive and he was in captivity with the Skrulls, but they're not only still learning from him, but they're planning on using him as a weapon, and they're building this giant tuning fork, and they're going to use him as, like, oh, man, that's an interesting take. Like, but of course, like, that's if you have this man, you know, you try and use his power, like, it's very interesting. I was like, that's pretty cool. I like it.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I mean, the last couple, and, like, we haven't really seen the Inhumans much. There was the Son of Man, Son of M miniseries after the House of M, and then there was a Silent War miniseries that was in Civil War. So we basically only see the Inhumans during a big crossover, and I was interested to see how they're going to handle all this stuff with Black Bolt, and I thought it was actually pretty good. The art and story were pretty good, and they're... It's just like you said, at the very end of Silent War, that's when Maximus kind of took over, and we haven't really seen anything since then. And so it's, you can kind of see that everyone's going along with it because they have to, but no one's really happy with it. And everyone's kind of like very wary of what Maximus is doing. And Karnak, he's the guy who's talking for the most part. He's the one, like, I really love when he was talking to all the children about what's the most important things about the Inhumans, and they're talking about it's the Terrigen Mist or the Terrigen Crystals, and he's like, no, he's like, it's the fact that we're all family. And that's always been very true with Inhumans, and I just thought I was surprised that it was this good. I, you know, being a, you know, Secret Invasion tie-in, I thought it was going to be a little bit iffy, but I thought it was great. I mean, I was really excited to see Black Bolt and to see what the Skrulls are doing with him. But I found myself, like, caring more about the rest of the story and about what the Inhumans were doing more than, like, Black Bolt. But I got to the end, I was like, oh, yeah, I totally forgot about Black Bolt. So it was very cool.
Yeah. The only thing, and it wasn't, like, necessarily terrible, but Tom Rainey's art, like, there were moments when I thought it was really good, and then there's also moments when I was like, it's really cheesecakey. Again, going back to that scene in the Queen's Chambers, and what's the other girl's name, she used to be an Avenger.
Oh, Crystal.
Crystal, like, it just looks like her costume is spray-painted on her body. Like, there's no... it doesn't look like she's wearing anything at all, and I was just like, it's almost like, just... It's a little distracting.
Yeah.
But yeah, it looks very cheesecakey. But other than that, it was a beautiful cover.
Absolutely. Yeah, the gorgeous. Cover was great. The cover was really good. I don't even know who did that, but that was well done on the cover.
Yeah. So it was a good story. I'm going to pick up the next issue. I like it a lot.
All right. So I let, you know, Eric pick Booster Gold number 11. So I picked this up. I'm so confused.
Well, yeah, it's, first of all, it's a time travel story, so that's rough.
I know. Time-traveling stories in the DCU, it's too much.
It's also, because it's a time-travel story, it goes back to the kind of a Silver Age type story. But this was...
What happens is that...
it was Back to the Future too.
Yeah, it was. It was Booster Gold going back to basically save Batman. Because of a time mess-up or a time hiccup, Batman ends up not existing. And Booster has to go back, and he goes back the first time to try to prevent everything from happening, and he has to go back as Killer Moth, this villain, and that doesn't really work out, and then so he has to go back, and he goes back as Batman, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was pretty cool, because once he found out that he had to go back as Batman, he was pretty thrilled about it. But it didn't end very well. Because freaking Alfred got a little trigger happy, shoots Rip Hunter, and now is holding Booster Gold and his sister by, you know, shotgun in the Batcave.
Alfred doesn't mess around. Don't mess around with Alfred.
Apparently not.
You think he's a nice
Alfred's
little
a crack shot.
English gentleman, but, you know, yeah, you don't mess around with him.
You know, but... I did have... It was confusing, and I did have some problems, like, figuring it out, but I thought it was pretty cool. It was pretty fun. It's I usually really love Dan Jurgens' art, and I actually started reading Booster Gold when this started coming out, and I really liked his art then better than I liked his art in this issue.
Really?
I,
See, I think
yeah,
he's gotten better.
see, and I think that that's a problem. I feel like, honestly, I feel like when he first started, it was like Dan Jurgens, like in the 90s. And everyone didn't really like that so much, but I was like, I love that. Like, it hadn't changed at all. And I think now he's being a little bit more progressive. It's changed a little bit. And so I think a lot of people are like, hey, that's better. But I'm kind of like, I want the old Dan Jurgens back.
Okay, well, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah, no,
It was
I thought.
cool. It was fun. It was funny. It feels like it was like everything that a Booster Gold book should be.
Yeah, and that's basically how I feel about it. I like, because Chuck Dixon read this before it took off, but this is the first story by Chuck Dixon. But I just like what I like about all these stories is going back and revisiting eras where typically you can't really go back because the door is closed on that. But you go back and Dick Grayson's Robin, Barbara Gordon's Batgirl, and then you go to like these really weird alternate timelines where Killer Moth becomes really successful and stuff like that. It's
Yeah.
goofy, but
He
this book
takes
definitely.
over Gotham City and there's a Killer Moth signal instead of a bat signal. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, I mean, this book doesn't take itself seriously at all, and I think that's why what I enjoy about it a lot. So.
Yeah, no, it was a good choice.
So, all right. Well, I'm glad you liked it. Or, we're okay with it.
Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was cool.
So, okay. Any other books?
No, I'm done. I think it's
Okay.
on to our movie review of the week.
That's right. Well, we went to the theaters. We saw the Clone Wars, and we both David and I bought the DVD sets of the previous Clone Wars series that was done on Cartoon Network. And what this is it's a 2 hour it's basically a 2 hour big screen premiere for the series that's going to be on Cartoon Network and I believe USA or TNT or one of those channels later on in the fall. And so this is kind of a setup. So with that, it's also one times or most recently one times when Lucas is still an editor, but he's let other people come in and take some creative control of the storyline, which is also kind of refreshing. So what did you think of it?
I thought that this was a nice kickoff to a television series, because that's how it seemed.
Yeah, I agree. I
I
wasn't
don't.
like super psyched going into it. I was more curious.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, we were both in the theater, and we're like. So even Eric's like, how do we feel about this going in? And I was like, I don't know. Excited? Not really. Curious. Curious. That's a good way to put it. It wasn't bad. It didn't disappoint. I feel like this didn't really need to be in the theaters, and it was like Lucas getting more money, maybe. The thing that I thought was interesting was, if you're going to put it in the theaters, you put it in theaters because of Star Wars fans and because of the Star Wars experience. And yet I had problems with certain things, like the opening crawl was completely different. The music was different. And I feel like if you're gonna put it, if you're gonna put it in the theater, you should have that, you know?
Yeah, or
And
it's like either do it right or not at all.
yeah, it's just like if you're going to go for the movie experience, change some of the, because this feels like this was, I mean, it feels like this was a finished product of the TV series, and they were like, okay, maybe we should do a movie, and it seems like they didn't really change anything at all. They just said, okay, let's just put it in the theater.
Yeah, I think it'll be a great TV series because the animation I thought was done very, very well, and the animation is leagues above anything I've ever seen on like a normal running television program. And I really like the stylized visuals and everything like that. But basically, what the Clone Wars was, and even the original series was, it was very action heavy oriented, and they started to put some more storyline in the second season, but it was still very like it was all about the energy and the kineticism of the Star Wars movies and putting that on the small screen, and that's what this was. It was just like battle after battle after battle. There was very little downtime, and there was even less like character
story.
moments.
This is, I mean, I'm gonna. I love Hayden Christensen, but this was, and I don't think that was his fault, but I think this was probably the best Anakin Skywalker we've seen.
Yeah, I agree. I liked his portrayal a lot in this, and I like the idea of him having a Padawan, and I like the Ahsoka character. I think there's a lot of potential there to be explored in the TV series.
Yeah, I think I was kind of worried. I figured that I would probably like her, but I felt like there might be another Jar Jar coming. There, she's very like Anakin. Well, she's very outspoken. She's kind of headstrong. She's kind of brash. And I think that's a nice counter. Honestly, though, I think it would have been cooler to have someone like the complete opposite of Anakin. V as Padawan, like someone really straight-laced and someone really by the book, like someone to like. And Ahsoka kind of does that. Like she kind of calls him on stuff and kind of tells him that he's wrong about certain stuff. The only thing I didn't like about their relationship were like their nicknames. It was like they were flirting with each other, and I was like, oh, it's kind of weird.
See, I never got that either. There was an Associated Press story about like, oh, it's a love triangle, and it's weird because she's 13. I never picked up on like, there was chemistry, but like, but not in a romantic way. I felt like,
No,
they,
and I wasn't being serious, but I just thought the nicknames were a little bit too much.
right, like the nicknames were kind of one of those things where you roll your eyes. But yeah, no, I read that as this Associated Press article, and they're like, oh, it's a love triangle now.
Oh,
Anakin's a
gosh.
dirty old man, and I was so upset, and I was like, no, they don't hint toward that at all. It's like
That's
just
ridiculous. That's so absurd.
there is chemistry there, but just because, it's a student-teacher relationship, and the whole thing is Anakin doesn't want a Padawan. But I think generally he starts to warm up towards her because she reminds him of him. And I like that they're both similar, because if he has something different, then it'd be too much like him and Obi-Wan again. But I like that he's able to see a little bit of himself in her, and there's moments when he looks at her, he's kind of proud of how she does things. But to the other side of the coin, I felt the actor who did Obi-Wan
Oh.
was just way too over the top, and it's almost like he was trying to do a bad impersonation. Like, he's always
Yes,
talking
that's exactly.
with.
Obi-Wan Kenobi came off as part of my language, but a dick in this movie. I was just like, I
Yeah,
kind of don't like Obi-Wan all of a sudden. What's going on?
Obi-Wan's definitely a bad.
Yeah, I mean everything that he like his role in the movie was fine. I mean they wanted to have him here, and I like that it didn't really focus that much on him, but it was focused more on Anakin. It was just the voice actor was just like way over the top and like way too arrogant, way too snobby. It was just like, okay, you are killing that character.
Yeah,
I
but
think.
I don't know. I thought it was a very, like you said, a very good TV series. I think it sets up a lot of potential for the TV show.
The only if that had one major problem with the movie, the only problem is that and the story's not huge, but the story's going somewhere, and then out of the blue at the end, Padme comes into the story and has like a prominent role, and it was just like out of the blue, out of nowhere. I mean, I didn't think she needed to be in there at all. I didn't like that part, but everything else I thought was cool. I am excited after seeing this. I'm excited for this series. I'll TiVo it. I will buy all the DVDs. I mean, we went to a matinee. I definitely don't like think it was a waste of money or anything. It just wasn't, a Star Wars
If
movie.
it felt kind of watered, it felt like watered down Star Wars. But at the
Yeah,
same time,
that's a good way to put it.
it's not
You can't
originally
compare
intended.
it.
Yeah, it's not originally intended to be a big screen, like to really be the movie between part two and three. So, it's the start of a TV series, and so for what it is, I think it was very good for what it is.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I was pretty happy with it. I mean, like we said, we both went in saying, what is this? How are we gonna feel about this? And we're both curious, and I think we both came out being like, oh, yeah, that's not that bad.
And it was kind of funny because there's moments in the movie where we're looking at each other like, what are you thinking? I can deal with that. I mean,
Yeah.
it definitely,
Worst things have happened to the Star Wars universe.
it's true, but at the same time, it didn't have that feel of the movies, but it was still good. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, definitely.
So. All right. Well, yeah, we're kind of doing a short show this week, but We appreciate you listening, and if you have any questions or comments for us on the show or anything you'd like to see, you can email us at contact@fanboystrikebacks.com. And also, please go to our website at www.fanboystrikeback.blogspot.com. And that is where we post our written reviews every week. And also, just you can download a podcast from there. We post articles and things that we think you like. We also have a link to our forums where you can go on and discuss topics that we don't talk about that on the show, or discuss topics we do talk about on the show, because we throw everything on there. But it's always a good way to talk to us about things that you might not hear and you might be curious about. So, and we always like seeing you on there, and we always enjoy the audience participation. So you can also find us on iTunes.
Yep, iTunes, Podcast Alley, any podcatcher out there. If you like the show, please leave us a review. That'll help us out. Tell your friends, word of mouth, spread the word. And like Eric said, hop on over to the forum. You can sign up there, have your own account, talk to us about all the stuff that's on the show, that's not. There's been a lot of good in-depth discussion on things that are pretty deep, you know, and good, and still connected to comics, so it's all good. And you can call us on our voicemail. If you want to call us and leave us a message, that is 206-350-2354. Give us a call, leave a message. If you have questions or a comment, if you have a question, just go ahead and leave that, and we'll play it on the show, and we'll answer it for you. And I think that does it for this week.
Yep. Thank you for listening. We will see you next week. Take care if I find